W1RPG. W1RPG.
1RPG, this is KO4OLK.
W1RPG test.
RPG, this is KO4OLK 59.
OLK N0TR, I hope I got that call sign right. My name's Tom. I'm located in Greer near Lake Cunningham, Lake Robinson. And I think that RPG gentleman's got his volume control turned down. Over.
It's KO4OLK. Yeah, I replied a couple times, got no response.
Done that DUH before, had the volume down and wondered why you weren't hearing anything. Well, good afternoon. I'm just sitting here looking at the computer and watching a little TV. Been out and gathered eggs from the chickens, and we just got light snow here. Still coming down. It's 31 degrees, feels like 26. And actually, the anemometer's saying that the wind is about 160 degrees at 2 to 4 mile an hour.
Here off of Highway 14, about halfway between Landrum and Wade Hampton Road, and the snow is very, very light. My temperature has dropped 1 degree down to 28, and I've got basically no wind whatsoever.
Thermal climb.
I've got a weather station here that will graph things on me, and the temperature's been kind of up and down 4 or 5 degrees all night long. It'll climb a little, then drop a little.
Yeah, I'm looking at my weather station. I was just baiting you because I heard you say you was a nuclear electronic technician. The S2s, Grumman's, and Petrie Orion's, and we love to chase you guys.
Assume that you guys could never find us.
You know, about the only thing I ever caught on a U.S. nuclear sub, and this was way back in the 60s, late 60s, was a turbine line, and it would disappear very rapidly. We were more or less looking for Hotel Echo November class subs that the Soviet Union had back then, and we could track them.
That's kind of why I went submarine. Any other service, any other place, they know exactly where you are. On a sub, they got to find you first. And I know that when we came out of our base here in Charleston and got out to sea, we can hear one of those Soviets all the way up at the home port in the Arctic ice.
In what years were you in? You must be a younger guy than I am by far.
Between 79 and 85.
Technology far improved. I ran a lot of different things because on the S2 off the carrier, we only had four of us on that plane, and I graduated from seat 3 over to seat 4, which was radar, electronic countermeasures, magnetic anomaly detection, and sniffer. Well, seat 3, and then seat 4 was Julie and Jezebel. And I don't think you've ever heard of Julie. It was explosive echo ranging, and they don't use that anymore. But Jezebel, I'm sure you've heard of that.
Back in the engine room, I don't hear a whole lot of stuff going on up forward, so I just pushed the boat and got them to where they wanted to go and followed orders.
Or fast attack.
Fast boat, USS Ray out of Charleston.
Wolf Virginia class is out of this world now. I don't even think they use the 7-blade J-blade anymore. I think they're using thrusters, but I'm not sure of that. But, yeah, I've heard they can type a sub as soon as they get off the Atlantic coast, clear over in the British Isles now.
understanding, I met a chief down near Kings Bay who was a surface warfare fella going out on an exercise trying to find a seawolf. His description of the thing was to go out and wait for the red flare, because he said that seawolf can go underneath him at maximum speed and they would never hear him.
I have my doubts about that. People tend to exaggerate. When that, if they got a screw on it, they cavitate. And when they cavitate, the sound breaks the sound barrier. And they'll sit in a 10,000 mile square area, and they'll run 5 to 6 knots the whole time, and then pop back up in the same place when they come home. And they have a blue and a gold crew. But if you go fast, you make noise.
Had a cavitation meter back there that we kept an eye on to make sure we didn't do that. But I think you're right. The newer class bolts are not using screws anymore. They're using propulsors or thrusters. And they're, from what I understand, much quieter. Never actually seen one, but heard about them.
Yeah, and so you may be 100% right, but usually you go fast, you make noise. You make noise, you die. We always look for a mothership because back in the late 60s, the Soviets were trying to keep up with us, and they introduced their nuclear boats before they had the proper shielding in that, and they'd have to take the crews off on the mothership and change the crews over due to radiation sickness. So if there was a mothership out there, you knew dang good and well you wasn't too far from finding that nuclear sub. Conventional boats, whole different story, you know, Whiskey class, Foxtrot class, and all that. They had the largest submarine force in the world at that time.
After hearing all that, glad I wasn't on a Sylvia boat, because my total exposure for my 6 years in the Navy was about less than what I would get on a sunny day spending the day on the beach.
The United States thinks a lot more of their special people than what the Russians do. I always tell people if they trust the Russian military or the Chinese military, that's where two fools met.
Back in the day, the Russians were the ones to be feared, and the Chinese were right behind them. But watching the Russian-Ukraine war now, I almost think it's a paper tiger and a teddy bear.
The Chinese have come a long ways. They've got a lot of conventional subs to try to hold off the carriers from getting within launch range. But they are introducing aircraft carriers now, and a full-blown nuclear carrier. Not just with the ramp on it, but a regular one like we got. And they do have nuclear subs. And I'll tell you, they've, especially in the last 4 years, let our military just go to pot. So I'm hoping for better things coming in the next 4 years.
Right now, the Chinese didn't develop it on their own. They stole everything from us.
Well, there's no question about that whatsoever, and they still are, and we're tolerating it. But I think the gentleman that's coming up there now will have a little less tolerance for stuff like that. But it's hard to do when you got your people out there that are building these things that they're stealing the industrial secrets, a lot of it from them. But oh well, so life goes. And you know, I don't even know if the social stations could pick you guys up, but you were the top 10% of the cream of the crop of the United States Navy. My brother was a Master Chief Personnelman, and he always told me that. I was just an E5.
But back in the day, that was the cream, and I wish I could remember half of it anymore.
and I'll be 77 this month, but it still intrigues me. I've been reading about, I like Yahoo News. I know it's pro-democratic, but other news agencies are pro-Republican and yada, yada, yada. I don't even want to get into that. I just look at a little of everything and then make up my own mind. But they were talking about us negotiating for, you remember the, back in World War II, the Nazis had submarine caves that they'd pull their submarines into for the U-boats. Well, Norway still has such facilities. I don't think they're quite large enough to accommodate our nuclear subs, but they're trying to negotiate the use of those caves again, which are like 900 feet under the mountains there, and they're part of NATO, and I think that'd be a pretty good idea to replenish our subs.
Germans built their version of them along in France as well during World War II. I'm familiar with those things. You're probably right. Boats nowadays are probably almost too big to fit in there. But that would be an interesting forward operating base.
You go there real close to them in the harbors and take special facilities, of course, you know, to replenish a nuke boat. But there's still people that that fear nuclear, and it's, in my opinion, very controllable now. It's a lot different than Three Mile Island, which was a human error, and you got a lot better software and things that control that, and ways of keeping them from running amok, shall we say. So I don't see that their fears are justified. I always tell people, have you ever heard of a nuclear submarine having a nuclear accident? I mean, we had the Scorpion, of course, and a few things like that, but that there was no radiation release, and there's never has been, even though it's out there in the Atlantic. We still monitor it very closely. But the Navy's done a fantastic job with their nuclear program. And I have another friend that is a nuclear engineer that I've talked to about these things.
The Scorpion was lost, I think, to a weapons accident, but you can't even begin to compare a naval reactor compared to a civilian power reactor. They're not even in, they're apples and oranges to each other. The physics and everything else controlling them are totally different.
Been told, but it wasn't, it was the fact that some pipes or something froze up in the back of it and they couldn't blow the ballast tanks. It wasn't an explosion or anything like that. Now, the Russians, that one that they lost over there, that was a torpedo of poor design that went off in the nose of it.
Scorpion, I believe, to a weapons thing, but you're thinking about the Thresher. Was trying to do a test dive and had her ballast tank lines freeze up. And that's what took the Thresher down.
You're quite correct. I'm wrong. Scorpion, where did that happen at? Refresh my memory.
Scorpion was during Cold War, and there's really some debate around actually what happened. There's some theories out there that we exchanged torpedoes, and the idea of a weapons explosion from inside is their cover story, and I've kind of seen evidence both ways, but either way, the Scorpion went down because of some kind of explosion, and the Thresher exceeded test depth because she couldn't blow her tanks.
Yes, sir, you're quite correct there. Well, where did the Scorpion go down at? Do we actually know that position?
Photos of the Scorpion laying on the bottom, so we definitely know where they're at, and we also had a pretty good idea of what actually happened. but I don't know that our government is actually willing to say what the truth is.
You mean you can't trust our government? I'm just kidding. But did they ever divulge? Was it in the Atlantic or the Pacific, or where was it at?
The Atlantic.
Muck. Just a guess.
I think the Cold War went hot for a brief moment, and we lost a boat, and they probably lost one too, and neither side will admit it.
I think that's really intriguing that Reagan raised that one the Soviets lost out there, that they picked up with Sosus, and they triangulated by the different places they had, and then went out there and... I was trying to think of the old boy that built the Spruce Goose. He built that ship that pulled it up into the bottom of the ship, and it broke. A lot of it broke off before they got it up into the ship. That was really a 007 story there.
Goose with Howard Hughes, and I think it was the Oscar Gorman or something like that was the special design ship the CIA tried to do that with. I read a lot about that. It was interesting.
TR. Yeah, and then Reagan gave Gorbachev the videotapes of them giving the Soviet sailors full Russian rights when they buried them at sea, which would have been an act of war without any question. We wasn't supposed to do that.
He was certainly a good communicator, and I think he did a good job. And I don't know, the politics get deep, and I don't think we'll ever really know the real truth.
He was my favorite, I'll tell you for sure. Well, they could, just with what they pulled up, they could still develop a lot of theories, I'm sure. And just even through the metallurgy of the superstructure of the ship itself, you know, you could determine diving depths and all of that stuff. And I don't think they got the nuclear tip torpedoes, and that's what they were after, but I'm not sure of that.
We are more interested in their weapons, but yeah, the metallurgy is important too, because metallurgy is what sunk the Titanic, was bad metallurgy.
Yeah, and craftsmanship, the way they done it, I've heard that. It just... time and design and everything changes, and they screwed up. There's no question about it. But it still just thrills me to death to read about some of the capabilities that that we have. And it's funny. I tell people, if I had divulged the things that they divulged in the hunt for Red October, I'd have been court-martialed back then.
Having lived it in the late 70s, early 80s, it was pretty amazing what we did. And, yeah, Hunt for Red October is probably the most realistic submarine movie I've ever seen. And I have to say that I love the last bit of the scene where the Soviet ambassador comes over to the U.S. ambassador, and the U.S. ambassador asks, "Please don't tell me you've lost another sub."
Yeah. Well, you remember the scene where the, I think he was a first class guy, and he was looking at these squiggly lines on this CRT up there on the, he was telling him it was a Kula class sub and yada, 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 and which direction and speed he was going and all that. And looking at the squiggly lines up there, that's Jezebel.
last name was Jonesy, and he was looking at his waterfall display. And, yeah, when we got a recording of a Russian boat, we can identify them, where they were and who they were and what they were and everything else just by listening to them.
When I was in, we'd go to the secret room, and we would read grams, and they were on paper. And I would say they're about as wide as a good-sized laptop. And there was these styluses down there, and they were at minus 300 volts. And they were receiving the information from the sonobuoys. And they would print out the acoustical characteristics of those submarines. And there were several different modes, LOFAR and CODAR and yada, yada, yada. And back then, I couldn't even say that. But when we would land, we would take those grams out and take them to intelligence, of course, and they would confirm our findings of what that sub was. But it was on paper grams, and the ones on the S2 were smaller devices, of course, because there was just four of us, and the ones on the P3 were big. And now they come up on flat screen TVs, I imagine. But that's how it was done back then.
Went up to sonar as part of my submarine qualifications and listened and watched stuff like that. And I guess between your time and my time, we had computers that would find the patterns and identify the boats for us. But I don't know how much paper was actually done because of just size, weight, and space.
Had recorders that were 14 channels, if I remember rightly. And, you know, we had the ability to record it and see it. And it was pretty interesting. It really was. And we used another device called Julie, and it was a chart recorder, and we would drop what we call Papa Delta Charlies, and they were small depth charges, and they'd go down 600 feet, and they would explode. And you would lay out a buoy pattern, say, for example, the number 5 on a dice, and you were at 100 feet off the water in the daytime or 300 feet at night, and you'd fly over the buoys, and you would drop the depth charge, and then my chart recorder would start running down in front of me, and I'd be monitoring that channel and that buoy and one other buoy, and you'd see an explosion, and then it would just go pow, and then you'd see choo, choo, and then a pow, and that was the bottom. And it would tell you how far, how many yards he was from buoy number 1 over to buoy number 5 or whatever. Nowadays, you'd probably start a nuclear war if you dropped those PDCs on him. This is N0TR.
KO4, okay. I feel sorry for the poor old whales doing that, but that's just time domain reflectometry.
It was like they used to hunt for oil wells. So it wasn't as secretive as the jazz was, but it was really a lot of fun because you were flying cloverleaf patterns at 100 feet off the water and pulling positive G's and then negative G's. And it was real easy to get air sick, I can tell you that.
Some stories talk about seasick on a submarine, but that would take the rest of the day.
Let's say I had seen some of the new boats at 34 knots, so I don't know what they do nowadays. Probably exceed 50.
All I know is you read Jane's classification books now, and they say this is what we think they can do, but it's actually classified. And that reminds me of a story that in World War II, a congressman was sitting and talking to another fella and explained how his son, who was on a submarine, had told him about how the Japanese were missing our subs because they were the wrong depth. About 2 weeks later, we lost a whole bunch of subs.
I remember once in the Iowa station there at the last at Moffett Field up by Mountain View, California, and there was an old boy asked me, he said, what was the question he asked me? Something about a sub, and I know what it was. He was reading the paper, and he looked over at me, and he said, wow, this sub can do this, and it can do that, and, you know, and wanted to know if what we'd done, if with respect to that was, in other words, was the newspaper article accurate? And I said, my country doesn't allow me to answer that, you know, because you would be compromising information. But there was people to ask you questions like that back then.
The answer was, I can neither confirm nor deny the absence or presence of nuclear weapons on board my ship.
Yeah, on, I remember they'd go down and they'd load the pilot and the co-pilot. They'd put us out, and they'd taxi down to the armament, and they would load a Mark 101 nuclear depth charge in the bomb bay. And they were real secretive about that stuff, but there was a lot of people didn't even know that we had a nuclear dip charge. And the deeper the sub went, the worse off he was, because it would crack his superstructure.
Thing that sinks any ship, surface or sub, is the pressure across the hull, the differential pressure. You can crush an egg if you hold the pressure evenly, you put a lot of pressure on it, but you put it on one point, it cracks very easy.
Torpedoes now, we carried homing torpedoes, I can't remember, Mark 46 or something in that line. But nowadays, they'll go under the center of the hull and then explode there, and it'll just break the ship in half.
A pressure wave followed by a cavitation, and the differential pressure across the hull, just like you said, it just snap it.
I've heard those torpedoes in the water doing practice exercises and that. And man, those high-speed props are really turning, and those things can really boogie. Well, I better let you go. I really enjoyed reminiscing about the 60s. And I don't think we compromised any information, especially as old as I am, because they've come light years ahead of what I did. But it was an experience that I wouldn't want to give up. You have a safe ride out there today. I didn't catch your name. Mine's Tom. And our grass isn't even fully covered here yet, and you'll be going right by our place within about a few blocks, actually. But you have a great day, sir. This is N0TR, and I'll be clear with your final.
This is Steven, and I am at my house here in Greer, and my grass is almost covered. And you have a great day. Stay warm. KO4OLK, clear.
The pleasure's all mine. This is N0TR, clear.